We have the two thumbs up. Just as a make sure you get the handout that Ann's passing out. She's leaving them by the door, I guess. Some of the slides I heard through the grapevine were kind of hard to read, so I printed them out so it'd be easier to read. And I reworked some of it, so we'll see how that works. All righty. So this is the second and last installment for this month, anyway, for the post-captivity Old Testament, which really is the return from exile. And this is start with prayer. Father, we just lift you up, and we know that there's many people who are sick and can't come and all kinds of things, but we're just grateful for the people who are here tonight, that they be encouraged by listening to your word, and that they learn everything that you want them to learn, because it's really you're the teacher. It's all in your hands. And so in the name of Jesus, amen. All right. So we'll do a little bit of review. As we mentioned last week, the scope of this is last chapter of Jeremiah, the last chapter of Kings, well, the second to the last, Chronicles, and Daniel 5 to 7. The reasons for those is because they all have things that have to do with things that happened in Ezra, Nehemiah, Zechariah, and so there's some important things that we need to know. We need to look in the past to understand what significance they have. Otherwise, you're just reading those books and going, okay, right? And so we kind of want to know the significance of this. We started off with this diagram, which comes out of Bible Knowledge Commentary, and I drew some stuff on it since then. So let's just start from left to right. All right, so 70 years of captivity end, and we know that is at the same time that Babylonian rule ends. Those two things come together. They're very important. So Jeremiah, he foretold that the Babylonian Empire would end, and so they did. And we know from Daniel 5 the events that happened. Also, so in red, I've put the Persian kings. Remember how important we need to know that the dates of the Persian kings are, because they tell us, that allows us to place the events in these books in their proper perspective. So Cyrus II, a.k.a. Cyrus the Great, when he comes to power in Babylon, when they take over, that starts at 535, we get to decree to start the temple. So that's a very important event. Remember, the book of Ezra encompasses the Zerubbabel and Ezra. He just happened to write both and the tail end of Chronicles. So you can see what I've written here in red, unfortunately it's not red in your handout, is that the book of Ezra has all four of our important Persian kings. So it encompasses all those guys. So Darius is involved in the Zerubbabel episode. He's also, but he's not involved when Ezra comes. That's Xerxes. And you'll notice there's a gap of 57 years between the temple being built and the people being reformed. And so, things happen. And so people, that's just what people do. We'll go through that. Okay, if you look at the bottom now, so we got Zerubbabel, Ezra, these are the general events that we're following. Notice it says Haggai and Zechariah. They're on the bottom. Those guys slide in into our temple rebuild. Okay, they slide in there, and we'll look at that again as a refresher. Esther belongs between Zerubbabel and Ezra. And that's how Esther refers to Xerxes, and that's how we can date Esther. And so again, the Persian king dating becomes extremely important. Artaxerxes also, if you recall, we mentioned that he shows up in Ezra 4, chapter 4, verse 7. And so that's where he is, and then we go back chapter 4, then we resume in chapter 7. And so the people are reformed. And so Artaxerxes is also the one who gives the decree to rebuild the wall. Now, do you remember why that was so important? The rebuilding of the wall, that decree, is when Daniel's 70 weeks starts. So there's a couple threads here that are really important. The first one, of course, is Daniel's 70 weeks. The second one is the lineage from David to Jesus Christ has to be preserved through all this. So we'll look at that. And also the temple articles. We want to trace them all the way through and see how they went back into the new temple that's rebuilt. So those are the things that are all important that we trace through. And so Malachi fits in Actually, Malachi doesn't refer to any, but we won't get to that today. But he fits in, but he doesn't refer to anything. So, now there is one prophet that we're going to look at, and he doesn't use Persian kings for his deity. He uses the exiled Jewish king, Jehoiakim. And so that makes it very interesting. If you'll recall, when Pastor Bob left 2 Sundays ago, he left that for me to explain to you. So, okay, I will explain it best I can. Okay? And so that's the general flow of things, and that's why I say as they apply to Persian kings, except for Ezekiel, I forget what I said, is Ezekiel, he uses Jehoiakim dating from Jehoiakim. All right. So the general flow, I don't know if you all had a chance to write this down last week, but we are interested in Cyrus II or the Great. We're not interested in the next two guys, Cambyses or Pseudo-Smerdes. We are interested in Darius I, who also called himself the Great, and Sophorus, also Xerxes. That's Esther right there, and Artaxerxes. So those are the important guys and the fact that they did things on behalf of Israel for them to go back to. And so those are the guys that we're interested in. Now, you remember this thing, which I gave to you on your handout. This is the general flow that we follow. And we made reference to the fact that you go all the way from 1 to chapter 4 or 5, and then you have to stop. Go look at Haggai, go look at Zechariah, see what happened and why, you know, what it is that they did that got things working again. Then you go to Ezra 5 and 6, which is the rebuilding of the temple. Then you go back to Ezra 4:7 because there's a different king mentioned, 4:6 because there's a different king mentioned. And then in Ezra 4:7, there's yet another king mentioned. So you kind of go back and forth. And because they all use Persian kings, we can date those easily. If we're lucky, we'll make it to Ezra 3. So that's our goal this evening. All right? We did talk last week about multiple Dariuses. I'm just going to say, you don't want to confuse Darius the Mede and Daniel with Darius the Great, the Persian king. Yes, they're both parts of the same kingdom, but they're not the same guy. So that's all I wanted to say that. We did talk exclusively about the plan of God and spiritual warfare. And let's just pull up Ephesians 6:12 there. And just remind ourselves, and then I'll show you what I'm talking about. This is, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. And so you might look at, let's just go to Ezra 4. I'll show you what I'm talking about. You know, very often that we get involved in a ministry. Very often we'll get involved in something, and initially you'll have success. Everything's great. And then, bam, you hit some sort of tribulation. Something happens. And all of a sudden, you have this choice. Whether you continue to follow, or, you know, do you wait? In this case, we'll see that these guys went way too far. I mean, you're always going to hit it. I mean, if you're doing anything for the kingdom, you know, hello, Satan's coming after you, okay? That's what he does. If you're not doing anything, you might get left alone. But if you're doing something for his kingdom, you know, you're attracting his attention, either him or his forces. And so let's just tell you that. All right, Ezra chapter 4. So the first test comes along, and just to show, you know, and they did well here. And this is part of what we're saying here. These guys, you think they're not just individuals, okay? Right? They're part of Satan's world. They're doing what he wants. And so you always have to look at things. Just like now, okay, you look at Israel and all the Palestinians. You know, most of the people say, oh, Palestinians, you know, we got to do something for them, blah, blah, blah. Well, look at the original map of the tribal allotments. It ain't theirs, okay? It's not theirs. That's not God's plan. But our human thinking doesn't see this as part of spiritual warfare. And when you read these things, I think spiritual warfare has to be a key ingredient of how the filters that you read, that you look at this stuff and go, oh, yeah, here it comes again. So I showed you last week all the times that Satan has come and done this, you know, Tower of Babel, Eden, all those things. Why wouldn't he try to stop them from coming in again? That's the last thing he wants, is for Jerusalem to be vibrant again and God to be there again. He does not want that. So just to give you an example, so when the enemies of Judah and Benjamin, okay, that's your first clue. We're talking about spiritual warfare. Heard that the people of the exile were building a temple to the Lord. Okay, this is obviously something Satan would not want. Okay, they approached Zerubbabel and the heads of the fathers of the households and said to them, "Let us build with you, for we, like you, seek your God, and we have been sacrificing to him since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Assyria, who brought us up here." Sounds pretty innocent, doesn't it? Yeah, okay, you know, you've been probably, you know, right? Well, who knows what they've been worshiping? Who knows what they've been doing? We don't know. But it sounds okay, right? In the human thinking, it would sound okay. But Zerubbabel was on top of this. He says, but Zerubbabel and Jeshua, the rest of the heads of the house of Israel, said to them, "You have nothing in common for us in building the house of our God." You know, this is their task. This is what they were supposed to do. And they were supposed to do it by themselves. But we ourselves will together build to the Lord God of Israel, as the king Cyrus, the king of Persia, has commanded us to do. Very good. They did a good job. Nope, we don't want your help. We don't need it. They sobbed for what it was. Then they try again, and this is what we're talking about, spiritual warfare. Satan's not going to stop, right? He is not going to back off. He doesn't want the temple built. At this point, all they have is the foundation and the altar. Then the people of the land discouraged the people of Judah and frightened them from building, and hired counselors against them to frustrate their counsel all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. And if you look at verse 6, we're talking about a different king. So that's why we stopped there. And so they stopped. Now, sometimes you need to stop and recollect. Sometimes you need to refocus. But they were scared. You made it all the way from Persia to Jerusalem, okay? And in hostile territory, God protect you then. In hostile territory, you built the foundation and you built the altar. Do you really have any reason to be afraid? I mean, is there really any reason for you to say, "Oh, I don't think God's with us anymore"? Is there, any task? Is there any reason, after all that success you've had, is there any reason to start doubting God? And yet it happened with Elisha. Yeah, right. He did that thing with all those guys with Baal, beat them. Then he ran ahead of the chariot and all this. And all of a sudden, Jezebel said, "I'm going to kill you." And woo! Okay, it happens. Okay, I'm scared. Right? And that was it for him. He really didn't do a whole lot after that. You know, really, we as humans, we're just like that. Satan knows just how to hit the right button. So you might think, okay, well, maybe that wasn't all that bad. You know, maybe they did the right thing. Maybe they just hung back. Okay, let's go to Haggai. See what God says about this. Keep in mind, Haggai takes place 18 years later. Okay? 18 years. And so let's see what I'm talking. So you'll notice in the very start that Haggai goes right to the top. Zerubbabel, he's the one in charge, and he's the one he goes to. Because by now, 18 years, you can imagine everybody's scattered. They're back to their original villages, doing their own thing, probably doing the same thing they did in Babylon before they came. Which is strange. You think how excited they were when they came. Now they want nothing to do with the temple, or they just make excuses and keep doing their own thing. So in the second year of Darius, there's our dating. The first day of the sixth month, the word of the Lord came to the prophet Haggai to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah. We'll talk about Zerubbabel here in a little while. And Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest. So you have the civil leader and you have the high priest. Thus says the Lord, this people says, the time has not come, even the time for the house of the Lord to be rebuilt. That's their excuse. It's not time. It doesn't seem like it's the time. They're not preparing. They're not doing anything. And so this is what the Lord. The word of the Lord came to Haggai, the prophet, saying, "Is it time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house lies desolate?" You know, it's almost like, how dare you? You built your own house, you built your own life, and hey, Jerusalem, the wind's still whistling through the foundation. Whew, you know? And you've done it, left it there for 80 years. So, you know, that's spiritual warfare. You know, the fact that they got scared and stopped working, and obviously the Lord was still there. He didn't go anywhere. All right? And so, you know, any endeavor that you get yourself involved with the Lord, you can expect that something's going to happen. Right? And if you stay in the Word and you put on the armor of God, you'll be better able to spot these things. And I think you'll find, well, as we do this later on, that these guys, they had to be retaught. They had to be retrained. And so that's that point. We talked about how did Israel get into this problem, this exile. We talked about the five levels of discipline, five cycles of discipline, and we won't belabor that too much. When Pastor Bob was doing his Jeremiah series, he pointed out that when he was looking at Jeremiah 5:6, when he was talking about the animals out in the field attacking the people, you know, that's cycle three. That was cycle three. And obviously when Babylon came and sacked Jerusalem and all that, that was, you know, cycle five. And so you could probably add others. And so then we also looked at Solomon, and we looked at that, we looked at that last week, but it says that people will come by and hiss, and Jerusalem become a proverb, and so that's that kind of say, yeah, well, you know, if you like other gods, don't be like the Jews, right? That's that kind of thing, right? You become, don't be like the Jews. So that's the kind of attitude that people have. And of course, Chronicles 36 chronicles the sacking of Jerusalem. This is where we left off. The fact that God's people would once again live in a restored Jerusalem was known. Okay, they knew this. For instance, you look at this is a kind of a layout of the book of Ezekiel, and I don't know whether you knew this or not, but Ezekiel spent his whole ministry in Babylon, and so what he was preaching there, Jeremiah was in Jerusalem, basically giving the same information. And as you can see, if you look at the topics, he was prophesying during the siege, and he had prophesied after the siege. And he talked about the restoration of Israel and the fact that God would bring them back and that kind of thing. So you'll find that they had plenty of information. And so when you look at Ezra 1 and you find that not everybody went, you kind of scratch your head. I mean, this is the opportunity to go back to Jerusalem. This is your opportunity to do, you know, God said that you can go back. You can go back. So I said to you, go. Anyone who wants to go, go. Very few went. They were happy with their Babylonian lives. But they knew that this is what God wanted them to do. I'm going to go back. Okay. And I think we looked at Daniel 9. We'll just do that. Just look at some of these. Yeah, this what's interesting about this Daniel 9, and I'll hit on it later, is he's reading something. He's reading Jeremiah. So Jeremiah's material, I found this interesting as I was studying it, that all this stuff, the lineage of all the priests, the lineage of the Levites, all this stuff seems to have made its way over to Babylon. Somebody took this stuff with them, and so they've also got the books. Daniel 9. So, and it, you know, I'm laboring this point because obviously the people didn't go. They knew about it. In fact, some of them did all their dating based on Jehoiachin. So obviously they knew this, but as we pointed out, a lot of Muslim didn't go. Daniel 9, the first year of Darius, the son of Asaphorus, of Median descent, who was made king over the kingdom of the Chaldeans. In his first reign, I, Daniel, observed the book, the number of years which was revealed as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah. So he's got Jeremiah's writings. So it's not like this is a mystery. You'll see there's some Second Chronicles. I believe we looked at that And that's where God says, after 70 years, you get to come back. And actually, the Second Chronicles and Ezra are exactly the same. So we assume that it was written. Jeremiah 25, he says this twice. So look at one of them. Obviously, people need encouragement and reminding. Don't we all? The whole land will be Jeremiah 25:11. The whole land will be desolate and a horror, and these nations will serve the king of Babylon for 70 years. 29:10, same thing. And then Zechariah, he explains it just a little bit. There's actually an explanation of what that was about. I don't think it's anywhere else. Hey, guy. Zechariah 7:5. Say to all the people of the land and to the priests, when you fasted and mourned in the fifth and 7 months, these 70 years, it was actually for me you fasted. So it's kind of like saying, well, you didn't get to do all the temples. It's kind of like fasting the whole time. And so you did it for me. So my point here, the reason we went through all this is, okay, people knew about this. It wasn't like it wasn't known. So this whole process, the process of the restoration of Jerusalem, look at our chart here, we'll go back to it from time to time, has to involve some physical restoration as well as spiritual restoration. You know, and I think you'll find, we won't have too much time to get into it, isn't spiritual restoration a whole lot harder to do than the physical? So like here, if you look at the layout of the book of Ezra, you see that chapters 7 and on are all about restoration of the people. The physical restoration is the first 6 chapters. Again, in Nehemiah, if you look at the focus on the top, it's restoration of people. You know, they built the wall in 51 days. So what was going on the other 19 years? Spiritual restoration. And so these charts here come from something called Talk Through the Bible. And Pastor Bob used it in his Through the Bible. I found them pretty. All right, so the physical restoration took 51 days and took them another 19 years. All right, so let's spend some time on the deportations. And the reason I'm doing this is because so much of what happens here plays into the later stuff. So let's kind of go through this. And you have this in your handout, so you can read it. All right, here. And so as you see, I added to it from last week. So that should help you put more events. All right, so the first deportation was in 605. And we can look at 2 Kings. In fact, what I'm going to do, eyes are fogging up, so even I can't read it. All right. So let's look at 2 Kings. We'll look at all the different ways that you find that different sources have different accounts, emphasizing different things, really, is what I meant to say. All right, so the first deportation happens in 605. So let's look at 24, verses 1 through 4. And we can tell this because of the Judean kings. Okay, so this dating is that direction. So in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon came up, and Jehoiakim, which is Jehoiachin's father, became his servant for 3 years, and then he turned and rebelled against him. That's Nebuchadnezzar. And the Lord sent against him bands of Chaldeans, bands of Arameans, bands of Moabites, and bands of Ammonites. So he sent them against Judah to destroy it according to the word of the Lord, which he had spoken through the servants and the prophets. Surely at the command of the Lord it came upon Judah to remove them from his sight because of the sins of Manasseh according to all he had done, and also for the innocent blood that was shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, and the Lord would not forgive. All All right, hold your finger there because you'll come back. Hop over to 2 Chronicles. Chapter 36. No, went too far. We get a little more information about this. Let's see here. Start verse 5. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against him, bound him in bronze chains, and took him to Babylon. This is Jehoiakim. Nebuchadnezzar also brought some of the articles of the house of the Lord to Babylon, and he put them in the temple at his temple in Babylon. Now the rest of the acts and the abominations which he did, which are found against him, behold, they are written in the book of Kings of Israel and Judah. And in Kings it said, these things are written in the book of Chronicles. Okay? So like I said, keep your finger on 2 Kings. If you go look at Daniel, you see how we can date Daniel. Daniel 1. And this is how it's determined that he went with the first batch. The third year of the reign of Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim was the one that Nebuchadnezzar came on and deposed him. So that's how we can date. This is Daniel. Now, the interesting thing about what you can do with 70 years. Actually, I didn't have to do that. Okay, so if you go straight across from the first deportation, 70 years is about when Ezra, when they built the temple and the altar. So that's the first way you can use the 70 years. So when Daniel was reading the book, it was 67 years, is what I read. It was about 67 years, they figure. And so by the time the temple got reconstructed, it was about 70 years. That's the first way that you use 70 years. So we looked at Daniel. That's how we figured out where Daniel was. What about the second deportation? Second deportation had Jehoiachin and Ezekiel. So how do we know that? By the way, that's a mistake. It's Ezekiel 1:2. So let's look at 2 Kings since we're there already. Verse 10, deportation to Babylon. At the time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, went up to Jerusalem, and the city came under siege. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to the city while his servants were besieging it. Jehoiachin, who is now the king, so this is how we know, this is how we can date this section right here. The king of Judah went out to the king of Babylon, he and his mother and his servants and his captains and his officials. So the king of Babylon took him captive on the eighth year of his reign. He basically surrendered. How far? 10 through 17. So he carried out from there the treasures of the house. So again, more things left. More treasures left to Babylon. And they cut into pieces parts of the king's house, vessels of good which Solomon the king had made in the temple of the Lord, just as the Lord had said. Then he led away into exile all Jerusalem and its captains and all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained except the poorest people in the land. So actually, the last batch had it the worst. So if you wanted to, if you're going to be put in exile, you want to be part of these first two. Okay, so how do we date? How can we figure out when Ezekiel took place? His ministry. So if we scoot over to Ezekiel. I went way too far. Ezekiel 1:2, actually. So now it came about in the 30th year, on the fifth day of the fourth moon, while I was in the river Chebar, which is basically something, it's like a canal off the Euphrates. I believe is what Pastor Bob said. Among the exiles, and the heavens opened up, and I saw visions of God. Verse 2, on the fifth of the month, in the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's exile. That's how we date Ezekiel. That's how we come to the conclusion that he was part of the second deportation. In fact, we'll look at this in a few minutes, Ezekiel does all his dating based on this exile government. And so that tells you that they'll still consider Jehoiakim their king. And then the last deportation, I hope you kept your thumb. We look at 2 Kings 25, first seven verses. This is the sacking. Now in the ninth year of his reign, the tenth day of the tenth month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came, and he and all his army against Jerusalem, camped against it, and built a siege wall all around it. And so, you know, when these start doing siege walls, people are starving. It's not a pretty sight. So the city was under siege until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. And who is Zedekiah? Well, he's Jehoiachin's uncle, and his name changed. So we'll go through that later. Find a place for that. This all this name changing is kind of a, but first, if you don't know him, it's a headache. So that's why we're here. And so on the ninth day, the famine was so severe in the city that there was no food for the people of the land. The city was broken into, and all the men of war fled by night by way of the gate between the two walls beside the king's garden, though the Chaldeans were all around the city, and they went by way of Araba. But the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king, overtook him in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered. They captured the king and brought him to King of Babylon at Riblah, and they passed sentence on him. Just to make sure they knew how little they thought of all that, they slaughtered the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes, and then they put out the eyes of Zedekiah and bound him in bronze fetters and brought him out of Babylon. And so, that's graphic. Also, you know, Jeremiah 52, you heard Pastor Bob go through that. It's even more graphic. Okay? And so how can we, there's another 70 years that you can come up with. From the time that Babylon was sacked, you can get to 70 years when the temple is completed, which is documented in Ezra 6:15. Okay? So that's another use of 70 years. That's kind of, so that's a diagram that covers a lot of ground, doesn't it? All right. And so this here, what you're seeing here is the part Pastor Bob said I'd tell you about. And so this is out of his Jeremiah slides, okay? So we've basically been through this. So the specific numbers, dates of various batches of captives, and details not found in 2 Kings 25, and it's harmonized as necessary with the numbers of captives recorded in 24. And so we kind of went through all that. And, of course, Jeremiah 52, we heard. We looked at Daniel first. We looked at, and so, and Ezekiel. And so we looked at that. So what about Ezekiel? So it's, the reason I brought some of this from Pastor Bob's Ezekiel study is because you realize that there's a group of people who just assumed that the line of David would go back. And so they do all their dating from based on Jehoiachin. And so they do this. And so there's a circle of people who are believing this. And you just, again, wonder why they didn't all go back to Jerusalem, but they were so comfortable. We'll see, we get to a Josephus quote. They're so comfortable, they stayed. And just like a lot of people that gave money to the missionaries that stayed behind. It's kind of the same thing. We're going to look at a few of these. It's obviously not necessary to look at them all. We looked at the first one already. Okay. So let's look at 8, and we'll look at one more after that, and just to give you the idea of how he does his dating. So it came out in the sixth year of the fifth day of the sixth month. I was sitting about sixth year of what? Okay, well, sixth year of exile. I was sitting in my house with the elders of Judah sitting before me, that the hand of God fell upon me. He goes on. How about 20? Chapter 20, we can find it. So he does all his dating this way. place. And here we go. On the seventh year, the fifth month, the tenth month, the elders. So there you have your dating based on the exile. So that's the interest. There's certainly people who thought that they'd be going back. So Ezekiel's prophecy is arranged chronologically. This is all from Pastor Bob's Ezekiel study, starting with the fifth year of exile. You saw the sixth, the seventh, and it goes on based on. So starting with the 25th year of exile, Ezekiel 40, except for the prophecies talked about in Ezekiel 29, these two variations are explained by the fact that they're grouped topically as part of the prophecies against Egypt in chapter 29 through 32. Ezekiel's ministry started on the fourth month and the fifth day in the fifth year of exile. That's Ezekiel 1 and 2. Jehoiakim came to the throne in December 597 BC after Jehoiakim died. That's his father. That's documented in 2 Kings 24, 1 through 12. After the reign of only 3 months, Jehoiachin was captured by Nebuchadnezzar and deported to Babylon. So on the fifth year, Jehoiakim's exile was 593 BC in the fourth month. So do you see where I've driven? So this is where he starts, just after they all got taken out. And his exile, we're going to see it ends, obviously, after the siege was done. And so that is it. All this time he's prophesizing. And so there's a guy who figured out the exact date, okay? And this book is no longer in print. It's called Babylonian Chronology. And so he established that Ezekiel began his ministry on July 21, 593 BC, the fifth day, counting both July 27 and 31. So, interestingly enough, Ezekiel also said, if you notice that in verse 1, it says, in the 30th year. And so scholars debate about this, the exact meaning of this statement, but many feel it refers to his age, which makes sense because in Numbers 43, it said you had to be 30 years old to be in ministry, no older than 50. And so he was qualified to be a prophet. And so the last day of prophecy in Ezekiel was in the 27th year of the first month of the first day. That's documented in Ezekiel 29:17. And since Ezekiel began prophesizing in 593, the fifth year of Jehoiakim's exile, this prophecy was 571. And so that puts it after the siege is done. Okay? And so that's Ezekiel. That's the harmonizing that Pastor Bob wanted me to do. So people use different date schemes depending on their point of view. Who is Jehoiakim? I'm going to do this because he's called three different names. Okay? And so I was looking through this, and I'm like, who is he? And how do you know? Because typically if someone said, well, this guy is really the same name, you go, yeah, right, okay. Okay, so I'll show you how we know. So this comes from the Baker Dictionary, and I took some from the Anchor. So this is from the Baker Dictionary. It says, Jehoiakim, the king of Judah for a very brief time, 598, 597. He was the son of Jehoiakim and Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem, possibly the same one mentioned in Jeremiah 26, 22. We won't look at that. But he sent them to Egypt. The king did. The name Jehoiakim means Yahweh will uphold. And variations include, okay, here we go with all the different names. But I'll be able to show you that it's the same guy. Okay? So, he's called Conaniah in Jeremiah 22, 24. You say, well, how do you know it's the same guy? I think you'll see it. It's kind of, you'll see how they came to the conclusion. These are all the same guy. Then I can trace the lineage to Jesus Christ. Because otherwise I'll just be giving you different names and you'll go, I know that's what I would do. All right, 26 to 22. Jeremiah. I don't follow. Okay, we're looking at we're not going to follow, Elnathan, we're not going to chase those out. We're going to Konaniah, Jeremiah 22, 24. And I went to the wrong chapter for some reason. 22:24. Okay, so this is how we know that they're the same person, all right? Follow along here. As I live, declares the Lord, even though Konaniah, the son of Jehoiakim, there's your clue. There's only so many sons of Jehoiakim. So Konaniah, son of Jehoiakim, I lost my place. The son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, wore a signet red ring on my right hand, yet I will pull it off of you. Well, Jehoiachin was king, and he lost it. So we can surmise, because of the number of sons that Jehoiakim had, this is the same guy. Okay? We see him in Esther. Hold your place in Jeremiah, because we'll come back there. What about Esther? In case you're wondering how we dated Esther in the first place. 2:6. This is another place where the dating is based on the king, the Jewish king in exile. So, actually, if you look at the beginning of chapter 2, after these things, when the anger of King Ahasuerus, remember we said that's his other name is Xerxes. So that's how we date Esther. But back to our thing, 2:6. So we back up to 5. It says, now there was a citadel in Susa, a Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shemel, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been taken into exile from Jerusalem with the captives who had been exiled with Jeconiah, the king of Judah. So there you see Konaniah, but I think this is the wrong reference. But wait, 22:24. Yes, sir. Anyways, we'll have to show you again. It's the same guy. It's Jeconiah, king of Judah. Well, we know Jeconiah. Jehoiachin was exiled, so this must be the same guy. All right, so maybe I have that out of place. Okay, Jeremiah 24. I'm not sure what I'm going to step there. After Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away the captive Jeconiah, son of Jehoiakim, it must be the same as Jehoiachin then. Based on the sons that we know that Jehoiakim had, this has to be the same guy. So Konaniah, and now we've seen Jeconiah. I see what I did. I got way out of place. All right, First Chronicles, again, another place where you see a name. So now, once we get all this squared away, then we can go and follow the lineage of Christ. Because, you know, all these guys are the same guy. Okay, First Chronicles, which you might say, hey, that's kind of an interesting place to go. You're kind of expecting maybe to go to Second Chronicles. First Chronicles 3 has a list of kings. 3:16. These are the sons of were Jehoiakim, Zedekiah his son. Then the sons of Jeconiah. Oh, okay. Well, this must be Jehoiachin. This is the only son listed. And so now we add our list, okay? Jehoiachin, Konaniah, and now Jeconiah are all the same guy. Back to Jeremiah. We looked at 24. How about 27:20? Which Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, did not take when he carried in exile Jeconiah. Okay. And we could go on, but now we see that. Now there's yet another name. Is Jeconiah. That's in Matthew 1:11. So we look in verse 12. It says, after the deportation to Babylon, Jeconiah became the father of Shealtiel, and Shealtiel the father of Zerubbabel. Hey, wait a minute. That guy sounds familiar, right? Zerubbabel. He sounds awfully familiar. Like he's in the account of Ezra. Zerubbabel was the father of Abihud. Abihud was the father of Eliakim, and Eliakim the father of Azor. Azor the father of Zadok. Zadok the father of Akim, and Akim the father of Eliud. Eliud was the father of Eleazar. Eleazar is in this room. The father of Matham, and Matham was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. And so there you see, Zerubbabel is in the line. So he's in the line from David to Jesus Christ. That's who Jehoiakim is. So we got all his names straight, right? Jehoiakim was 18 years old when he was installed the king upon his father's death. That's Jehoiakim. And he ruled only 3 months and 10 days in Jerusalem. And so we saw that documented. Evidence of Babylonian documents shows that he brought with him two wives. And he inherited the vassal kingdom. I edited out some stuff because I didn't agree with it. It didn't make any sense. All right. So here's I'm sorry, my eyes are fogging up. So let's see here. Baker Dictionary. All right. So besieged by the armies of the Babylonian overlord Nebuchadnezzar, Jehoiachin had little choice but to capitulate in the face of insurmountable odds. According to the Babylonian Chronicle, the records based on the official annals of the Babylonian kings, Nebuchadnezzar entered Syro-Palestine in December of 598 and captured Jerusalem on March 16th, 597. These guys have these dates down. The Babylonians plundered the palace and temple treasures, and Jehoiachin, his family, and prominent military leaders, royal officials, artisans were taken prisoner and led away into exile in Babylon. And we've looked at those references, 2 Kings 24, 12 through 16, and 2 Chronicles 36, 10. Before returning to Babylon, the victorious king placed Jehoiachin's uncle, Mattaniah, now named Zedekiah, you thought I was making that up, didn't you, on the throne in Jerusalem. I know you didn't think I was making it up. All right. Going on, it says, according to Jeremiah, the trauma caused by the Babylonian invasion of Judah and the consequent political upheaval prompted by a succession of three kings in 4 months had little impact on the people spiritually. You can look at in Jeremiah chapters 37, 38. The same prophet of God forecast Jehoiachin's exile and predicted he would have no descendants succeeding him on the throne. Let's look at that, Jeremiah 22. Because this is the important thing. It's like, oh, wait a minute. He said there would be no children. There'd be no children, and yet there was. Yeah, what's up with that? Sounds familiar. Okay, as I live, declares the Lord, even though Conani, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were a signet ring on my right hand, yet I will pull it off of you. So it's taken off. He will not be king. In contrast, if you remember, Pastor Bob was preaching that Hananiah prophesied that Jehoiakim would be restored to the throne within 2 years, which, of course, he wasn't. It's apparent that both in Babylonia and Judah, there were circles. This is what I thought was kind of important when you think about the fact that people didn't go to Jerusalem and Cyrus gave them the opportunity. So there was viewed Jehoiachin as a legitimate ruler of Judah, with Zedekiah being regarded as Jehoiachin's regent, as his uncle. The fact that the book of Ezekiel favors the dating system based on the year of Jehoiachin's deportation, Ezekiel 1:2, may reflect this view. In Judah, storage jar handles have been discovered in the sites of Tel Beit Mersin, Beth Shemesh, and Ramat Rahel, which bear the stamp of to Eliakim, steward of Yaukin. Most scholars accept the identification of Yaukin as a seal impression with Jehoiachin. Okay, obviously, the Bible haters don't like this stuff. It's assumed that although in exile, Jehoiachin continued to hold crown property in Judah, property which was administered by Eliakim of the stamp. Some scholars, however, argue that the evidence antedates Jehoiakim's reign, thus cannot relate to Jehoiakim. It has also been hypothesized that in addition to Eliakim seal impressions, contemporary seals ascribed to Jazaniah, servant of the king, and to Gedaliah, who is over the house, may constitute further evidence that both the people of Judah and Babylon and the Babylonians continue to regard exiled Jehoiachin as king, with Gedaliah acting as regent following the supposed regency of Zedekiah for Jehoiachin. So that means you have people thinking that they're going back. And yet when the moment came, I guess they didn't want to go. How am I doing on time? Oh, okay. He is certainly the Yaukin, the king of Yehuda, listed in one of the cuneiform tablets. This tablet contains inventories of rations, oil, and barley for the king and his five sons. Well, wait a minute. He wasn't supposed to have any kids, right? And implies that they were not in prison but living a fairly normal life in Babylonia. Later, during the reign of evil Merodach, Jehoiachin was released from prison and granted dining privileges with the Babylonian king. That was about 562 B.C. And you recall Pastor Bob reading that in Jeremiah 52. We will look at that. Jehoiachin's name appears in the Matthew's genealogy, as we just looked at, of Jesus Christ, chapter 1 through 11 and 12, and some contend that contradicts Jeremiah's oracle of judgment against the king's descendants in Jeremiah 22:30. Yet, it is possible to understand Haggai's blessing of Zerubbabel. Let's look at that. I'm going to finish reading. As a recession of Jeremiah's curse and the reinstatement of Jehoiakim's line in the Davidic line, in the Davidic ultimate messianic throne. And we know from Matthew that it did happen. But I think you'll see in Haggai, that there won't be. Yes, the signet ring will be redone, but there will never be a human king again until Christ comes back, who's in the line of David. All right. Haggai 2:20. And so the word of the Lord came a second time to Haggai on the 24th day of the month, saying, "Speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I'm going to shake the heavens and the earth. I will overthrow the stones of the kingdoms and destroy the power of the kingdoms of the nations. I will overthrow the chariots and the riders and the horses and the riders and go down." Am I reading right? 20 through 24, yeah. "And on that day, declares the Lord of hosts, I will take you, Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, my servant, and I will make you like a signet ring, for I have chosen you, declares the Lord." So he won't get to be king, but he'll be like one. Basically, the next king is going to be Jesus Christ. All right, so in reference to the epilogue of evil Merodach's mercy to King Jehoiakim, again, let's look at some of the slides from Pastor Bob's Jerusalem, Jeremiah, since he asked me to explain it. Similar ending to 2 Kings as Jeremiah 52. So let's look at that real fast. Let's look at the 2 Kings version. So now it came about And so it's interesting here, Jehoiachin is the name that's listed here. So you see different names, different places. So it came about in the 37th year of the exile of Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, in the 12th month of the 27th day of the month. And so what's the dating here used? It's based on his exile, right? Even Merodach, king of Babylon, in the year that he became king, released Jehoiachin, king of Judah, from prison. And he spoke kindly to him and set his throne above the throne of the kings who were with him in Babylon. So he's released. This epilogue presents a glimmer of hope for fulfillment of the Davidic covenant. Yet, of course, the curse of Jehoiachin must still be resolved. And what it is he won't be king, but he will be the signet ring. Jehoiachin is written down as childless, as we said before, in Jeremiah 22:30. But Chronicle records seven sons, which we looked at. So he had seven sons. The genealogy of Jesus Christ shows the lineage from Jehoiachin to Shealtiel to Zerubbabel, who's our guy here in Ezra. And Joseph is the husband of Mary, but not the biological father. The signet ring is removed from Yahweh's hand when he dethrones Jehoiachin in Jeremiah 22:24, and the signet ring prophecy is given to Zerubbabel when Yahweh declares to enthrone him, and that was in Haggai. So there's your notes. All right. Ezra. He made it, sort of. Interesting here, and if you move to, we'll be in Ezra for a while here. So I didn't make it to Ezra 2. In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he sent a proclamation throughout his kingdom and also put it in writing. Now, I don't know about you. You know, I'm trying to think, stir. What would that feel like? I remember when I was dating, and you had some sort of stirring or whatever there. So whatever it was, he was compelled to do this. This fulfilled the prophecy of the 70 years. As you remember, we looked at our chart. And so if you look at the top there is Cyrus. And so he does the prophecy, and then by the time that the temple is built, that's the 70 years. Also, we remember that Daniel read and said, oh, yeah, it's time. This also fulfilled Isaiah's prophecy, which we looked at last week, where he talked about Cyrus and said he was going to clear the ways for him. And we won't get to Josephus, but they did show this to Cyrus. And he was apparently quite pleased that he was mentioned 140, 150 years beforehand. And he thought that was cool, as I'm sure anybody would. Cyrus's decree instructed the Lord's people to return to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. That's Ezra 3. It says, whoever there is among you, may his God be with him. That kind of tells you that he's not a believer. Let him go to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem. So, that's kind of segmented thinking, very, very common among people in that time. Oh, your God operates here, but he doesn't operate over here. Right? That's very common. Every survivor, in whatever place he may live, let the men of that place support him with silver and gold. What does that remind you of? Exodus, right? Yeah, that's how they paid their way. And cattle, together with the freewill offering for the house which is in Jerusalem. Going on, chapter 5. The heads of the fathers of the household of Judah and Benjamin and the priests and the Levites arose, even everyone whose spirit, here we go with that stirred again, is stirred. And so this is important, right? You're going to build a temple, you need to send the Levites, right? And you need to send the priests, because they're the ones that work there. So that's important to send them along. And all those about them encouraged them with articles of silver and gold and goods, with cattle and valuables, aside from what all that had been given as a freewill offering. And so people who were there, they basically funded. And here's also, and I wish we had time to trace the elements, the articles, but here, King Cyrus brought out the articles of the house of the Lord, which Nebuchadnezzar carried away, not once but twice from Jerusalem, and put in the house of his gods. You know, they were safe there, if you think about it, except for when, what's his name, had that party and took the things out and was drinking Belteshazzar, started drinking all that. That was a good way to end his empire. But basically, all these things were safe. If they'd stayed in Jerusalem, would they have been safe? I don't think so. I don't see how. And so, actually, they were safe in their catalog and everything. And now they were, this was the number of 30 gold dishes, 100 silver dishes, 29 duplicates, 30 gold bowls, 410 silver bowls, all these things that they need to do to perform the functions. And it goes on, and 1,000 other articles. So there's quite a bit of items that got turned over. All the articles of gold, silver, numbered 5,400. Now, a lot of people have a problem with this. The numbers don't jive. Well, you list the important stuff. You're not going to list all 5,400 things. After all, you're writing with a quill, right? And so all this stuff was documented. And Sheshbazzar brought all out all the items and the exiles who went up from Babylon to Jerusalem. So they took all this stuff with them. And it's 8:30, so we'll have to close. And so sometime in a few months, you'll get some more of this. Let me close. Thank you, Lord, for letting my eyes hold up for a while there. And thank you for just allowing us to teach the word and allow people to learn what it is, what people did back then, and how it applies to us today. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.